from the IEC, other officials, representatives from the various legal teams that are on the platform are welcome to this meeting. Just in terms of the agenda for the day, we do have two items as a committee. So one is the briefing by the IEC on the formula for the calculation of seats as proposed by the Electoral Amendment Bill. And the second item deals with the Department of Justice in relation to the Drug Trafficking Amendment Bill, which we will deal with once we are done with the engagement with the IEC. Let me once again welcome the IEC to our meeting. As you're aware, as a committee, we're processing the Electoral Amendment Bill. And in our last meeting, we had an engagement with the Department of Home Affairs, where we received a briefing on the bill. We had a very lengthy and fruitful engagement. And out of that meeting, there are areas that came out, which I think the IEC will also need to provide clarity. And I'm sure members, as we engage on this bill, will further raise these issues. Maybe today, as we receive the briefing on the seat allocation as is directed, the IEC, obviously we will deal with any other matters that might come up related to the Electoral Amendment Bill. And items of seat can be very technical, but we thought that it's prudent that the committee is taken through this process so that as we continue processing this bill, and as comments come from the public on this bill, and also given the limited space of time that we try to address matters from this bill, we thought as a committee we should have an understanding of this formula and calculation. And in that sense, we also request the IEC to explain this thing in simple terms, including how seats are to be allocated for independent candidates and political parties, and I think any other related matter, as I said, any other matter that the IEC would want to bring to our attention. I think we take your presentation. And thereafter, honourable members will take further discussion on the presentation. However, honourable members, if you issue of the formula and calculations that you want clarity while they're busy doing that, please indicate so, and I think we'll deal with that in that manner. Let me then hand over to yourself, Commissioner Muepia, the chair of the IEC, perhaps to also give us an indication on who is present from the Commission, and I'm sure the CEO would, when he does present, can also give us an indication who is present at that level. Commissioner, over to you.
Chairperson of the Select Committee on Security and Justice, Ms. Sheikh, members of the committee, Deputy Minister, DGs, my colleagues in the Commission, distinguished guests, good morning. I am joined this morning by the Vice Chairperson of the Electoral Commission, Ms. Janet Love, Commissioner Glenn Mashinini, and Commissioner Nomsa Masuku, as well as the CEO and his team. Our task this morning is a straightforward one. We have been requested to come and brief this committee on the formula that will be used for the calculation of seats as proposed in the Electoral Amendment Bill. But before I do so, I want to take this opportunity to deal with a few things up front. We have prepared this presentation. But it is not so much this presentation that is important. I think it is the journey we have taken that we also want to share with you. As the Electoral Commission, we have seen through a number of bills and we have been called upon to deal with some technical aspects of bills. But we have never seen a bill that has called so much attention and required so much explanation as this bill. We accept that it raises some important things, but we also accept that it is because of the weighty nature of the bill that we need to make it abundantly clear what it is that we are dealing with. This bill is technical to the extent that we have to come and explain. Schedule 1 capital A is indeed not just a piece of law. It's a technical thing that is fraught with formulae and figures that one needs to use to make it clear what exactly it is that we are seeking to do. Without speculating and perhaps even wasting time, we humbly wish to point out that we have, from a technical point of view, painstakingly looked at how the letter of the law, as we have in the bill, is espoused in Schedule 1 capital A. We have done so looking at how, if this bill is to be passed, how it will pan out in practice. This is what we will present this morning. It's important we point this out because there is so much being said that is not, in fact, correct or a proper representation of the bill. And I hope that this morning, without defending one position or the other, we will make it plain what it is that we see and is contained in this bill. We continue to reflect on the constructive criticisms that the bill has faced and continues to face. And to the extent that we are technically dealing with it, we raise those issues. If they need correction, we don't shy away from saying, on this part of the criticism or in this context, this is what the bill ought to do. And it'll become clear this morning when we deal with the bill, because those are the issues we confront. The last thing I want to point out is that we not only are speaking inside this house, but South Africans in general are interested in this bill. And we do think it is important that every patriotic, every peace-loving, every democratic, every South African that wants to promote the democracy we have and enjoys that democracy truly engages the bill from the point of view of what it contains and not what we think it is, it seeks to do or it contains. This is the spirit with which we come before you this morning and are presenting this bill. Having said so, Chairperson, I'd like to ask our CEO to present the formulae as we have been requested to do this morning. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Commissioner CEO.
CEO, you're muted.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of the session. As well as the chairperson of the commission. I'm going to be taking the honorable committee through the calculation methodology. In other words, how do we translate the votes received into seats in the various legislative bodies? Let me get the presentation on full screen. Thank you. So in terms of the content that we're going to go through, We're going to look at what the Constitution demands of us in terms of the construction of a compliant electoral system, and look at the concepts that are at play in discussing matters of proportionality, and then dealing with claims of distortion. Then we will deal with adjustments that we believe must be introduced in order to ensure parity of treatment in relation to electoral contestants. We will then deal with two issues that require further technical adjustments. They are not issues of principle, but they are important technical cleanup, as it were, that we believe must be brought to bear in the bill as it exists. And we'll then lastly deal with some various scenarios. Now, Chair, this subject is inherently a technical subject. We will endeavor to present it as simply as we can, but we accept the difficulty of the technical nature of the concepts at play. We'll try to take it slow so that all of us can have benefit of the presentation. Now, when we look at the at Section 46 and 105 of the Constitution, it provides that an electoral system must result in general proportional representation. And this, in our view, is important, that the constitutional standard is not a perfect proportion. Desirable as it may be, the Constitution is alive to the fact that the result may not necessarily be a perfect proportion. Hence, the language in general, it must result in proportional representation. And various studies generally agree that perfect proportionality, which means an electoral system where each party receives exactly the same share of seats as it receives the share of votes, is difficult to attain. That does not mean you don't endeavor, or you don't construct a system that endeavors to realize a perfect proportion. You do. But because you cannot always predict voting behavior, you've got to accept that there will be deviations from proportionality. And I think this is a very important point that we think the committee needs to bear in mind, that proportionality is important, and the system as described in Schedule 1A endeavors to realize that, but it's not always an attainable thing. And it logically follows, therefore, that some deviation from proportionality, in other words, disproportion, is unavoidable. And this is presumably the reason why the drafters of the Constitution use the phrase in general, in proportional representation, when Parliament constructs an electoral system. Now, there are three primary factors at play in the consideration of proportionality. And perhaps before I go into those three factors, upfront we need to mention that introducing independence as ordered by the Constitutional Court has a distorting effect, because independents are individuals, and if they do well, the extent of disproportion increases, and if they don't do well, the extent of disproportion then is not as high. So at the very beginning, we therefore have to accept that introducing independence is going to have a distorting effect in the proportional representation system that is on the table. Having said so, there are three factors that really are at play in the determination of proportionality. Firstly, is electoral threshold. And this refers to the minimum share of votes expressed in percentage that a party or candidate must win to obtain a seat in parliament. In jurisdictions such as Germany, New Zealand, and Russia, they have established this electoral threshold. And they say, for instance, any contestant must have 5% of the votes before they are considered for a seat. So that's one of the factors that is to be considered when one looks at the concept of proportionality. Two, the district magnitude, in other words, the number of candidates to be elected in an electoral district. And then thirdly, the electoral formula, which is the mathematical equation that determines how votes are translated into parliamentary seats. So those three factors must be considered when one looks at the extent of proportionality of any proposed electoral system. Now, overall, proportionality of an electoral system increases with a decrease in the electoral threshold. If it's 5% and you reduce it to 2% or even 1%, that increases your proportionality. Secondly, it increases in the average district magnitude. The district magnitude is the number of candidates to be elected in the district. And thirdly, improvements in the proportionality of the electoral formula, and we'll spend a bit of time on this matter today. Now, across all three factors, South Africa's electoral system is ranked among the most proportional in the world, the most proportional in the world, because we do not have an electoral threshold. We're not saying you must first gain 5 or 10% or 15% or whatever the case may be. There is no electoral threshold. There is no electoral threshold that is proposed in Schedule 1A of the bill. And the number of people to be elected, at least insofar as the National Assembly goes, is 400. And we will deal with how that 400 is distributed. And the mathematical formula we will deal with in more detail shortly. Now, our electoral system is embodied in Schedule 1A to the Electoral Amendment Bill. It provides that the 400 seats of the National Assembly will be contested on the basis of 200 national compensatory seats and 200 regional seats. And this distribution has been the case since 1994. So it's a retention of an existing distribution. The Commission is then empowered to proportionally determine the regional allocation of the seats, of the regional seats. In other words, how many does, of the 200, how many does Gauteng get, how many does KZN get, Western Cape, Limpopo, and so on. So the Commission is charged in terms of Schedule 1A with that determination, which determination must be made ahead of the election. Independent candidates may only contest the 200 regional seats. And the 200 regional seats, conceptually speaking, they are multi-member regional constituencies because the regions are constituencies of a multi-member nature and regionally determined. So, and it is in those multi-member regional constituencies or provinces, if you like, where independents are going to be contesting. A party must submit a national list and at least one regional list. Group is the method of determining the quota required to obtain a seat. In other words, we're using the group formula as a method of determining the quota required to obtain a single seat. So simply put, a quota is the number of votes required to secure a single seat. So if you have votes equivalent to the quota, it guarantees you one seat. Again, group is considered one of the most proportionate formulas. I mean, that's here, which is also considered as such. Imperially to some degree and so on. But since 1994, the country has been using the group method, and it has generally given us a very proportionate outcome in terms of our elections. Now, independents may contest a seat in multiple regions, but this is not mandatory. An independent will have to exercise an election as to whether they want to limit their participation in one region or in multiple regions. So it's not a mandatory requirement for them to contest multiple regions. And because independents are single people, they may only be elected onto a single seat. And as a consequence, there's a fit for fate and recalculation method to award surplus seats in the event they win more than one seat. Now, a party that submits fewer candidates than the number of seats it wins is for faith, the exercise. Now, practice tells me that this is unlikely to materialize where a party submits fewer than the seats it wins. It's a possibility, but highly unlikely that it happens. But in case it does happen, there's a forfeiture calculation embedded in Schedule 1A to deal with that scenario in the event it arises. Independents currently must submit signatures to evidence support. The portfolio committee has determined 20% of votes required for a quota in a comparable previous election. We wish to make a proposal in that regard shortly to extend the scope of that requirement to unrepresented political parties. Now, to give the committee a sense of what the extent is of this requirement, of the regional quotas that obtained in 2019, we have the highest in Gauteng at 92,000, that was the quota, and 20% of that, it's 18,520. In the second, I think, is KZN at 17,393, that being 20%, and the Western Cape, sort of being the second at 17,602. The least is the Northern Cape at 13,695. So those are the signatures that would be required in terms of the bill in respect of independence in order to indicate support among the electorate. We believe that we need to ensure that there is parity of treatment in relation to electoral contestants. And we propose an additional provision in Section 27 by including a sub-provision in C, which will read in the following manner. In the case of a registered party not represented in a legislative body, a completed prescribed form confirming that the party has submitted in the prescribed manner the names, identity numbers and signatures of voters whose names appear on the segment of the voters' roll for each region or province in which the party has nominated candidates and who support the party, totaling at least 20% of the quota for a seat in the previous comparable election. So in other words, what this additional provision that we are proposing would do is to bring parity of treatment between independent candidates as well as unrepresented parties, registered but not having a seat in any legislative assembly. We believe that this then will ameliorate the differential treatment for independent as well as unregistered parties. Registered represented parties would not do the same because they've already shown support by winning seats or a seat or seats in legislative body. So they've already shown through a objective electoral process that they hold support in the various electoral districts for particular legislative bodies. And concomitant with this is that once an independent has representation in a legislative body at the subsequent election, we propose that they may not also be expected to file signatures if they are already elected into a legislative body. Again, that is intended to realize a parity of treatment between electoral contestants. So those are, this is an addition that we propose in section 27. Now, to get to the mathematical side of things, so we preface that by saying the following, that a technical description of our electoral system is a multi-member, two-tier compensatory closed list proportional system for the National Assembly. Multi-member is two-tier, the regional tier as well as the national tier. It's a closed list system because voters don't rank candidates on the ballot. And it's a proportional system. The total number of seats is divided as indicated into 200 compensatory national lists, national seats, and 200 regional lists. The regional lists are to be divided between regions using registration figures. In other words, using the figures in the voter's roll. The group quota is used for all the National Assembly and provincial legislature applications. Now, I will demonstrate this shortly, but at a high level, groups divide the total valid votes by the available seats in a legislative body plus one, disregarding fractions. So that's really the mathematical formula for determining the seats. You first determine the quota, and I've already indicated that a quota is the number of votes required to secure one seat. So we propose, therefore, the Schedule 1J proposes the use of group in the calculations. Now, with the recent inclusion of independent candidates, each voter will receive two ballots for the elections of the National Assembly. One ballot will be for the regional election, which will include independent candidates. And the second ballot will be a PR compensatory ballot where only parties appear. For the provincial legislature, the bill proposes the retention of the single ballot. Now, just a graphic illustration of the proposed calculation for the National Assembly. The first step in the calculation is to determine the quota in each region. So this will be nine different calculations. There'll be a calculation per each region, per each regional election. And you first determine the quota of votes per seat in that region. And it therefore follows that the quota per seat will be different or may be different from one region to the next, because it's dependent on total valid votes as well as the seats in that region. So the formula is total valid votes in that region divided by total seats plus one and the results plus one. And you then draw the fractions. Now you then take that quota and divide that into each party's vote to determine the number of seats that each party will get, that each party or independent is getting in that region. So the political parties and independent candidates in the regions are subject to the same quota. There is no distinction in the calculation. They are subject to one common quota that obtains in that specific region. The only difference is that in the event a independent secures more than one seat, then there's a forfeiture calculation that arises, because by definition, an independent is a single person. And that scenario obviously has a distorting effect. It introduces a disproportion. Now, after the regional, after the second step rather, is that you make a calculation for the compensation seats. You determine each party's allocation in the region. Now you determine the compensatory elements. You calculate that compensatory component using 400 seats in order to endeavor to get as close as possible to proportionality at a high level. So again, you first do the quota of votes per seat in the compensatory element, working out of 400 seats. And the quota would be there, sorry, the calculation would be total valid votes that parties receive both in the regions and in the PR compensatory ballot, divided by total seats plus one, and remove the number of seats won by the independents in the regions. And you then, the next step is to divide the party valid votes in the regions and on the PR component, you divide it by that new quota of votes per seat. And then the last step then is to calculate the actual seats, which is the total overall seats allocated, total overall seats due to a party minus what the party has already received in the regions. This is important to show the strength of parties in the calculation, both in the regions and on a national level. Again, there's an endeavor to get as close as possible to overall proportional strength of the party. So that's really how the calculation is going to work. By summary, determine the regional quota for each region, do the seat allocation by dividing what the party or independent receive there, dividing that by the quota, and then doing the allocation in the regions and finalizing it. And then the second step is to look at a compensatory calculation where you include both the regional and the compensation pilot votes, subtracting from that equation the votes of the seats and the votes of the independents, and then working out of 400 to get to what will be the overall allocation per party, and then remove what they already have received in the regions. So in simple terms, really that's how the calculation is going to work. Now, just to illustrate this by further by Barros. We're having a little bit of a technical issue. Oh, there we go. Thank you. Sorry about this. Just to give a further illustration of the calculation, there are two ballots there on the left-hand side. Is a regional ballot, a notional regional ballot for Gauteng. It has parties there and independents. So parties and independents for that Gauteng regional election will be on the same ballot. Therefore, it means there'll be 9 different configuration of regional ballots across the country, because the contestants that are going to be competing for the Gauteng regional seats are not necessarily going to be the same in KZN, in the Western Cape, in Mpumalanga, or even in Limpopo. So the regional ballots are going to be different from one region to the other. Then the national compensatory ballots will bear only political parties, and there we have the example. So the regional ballots will then be used in the first step of the regional allocation or of the regional calculations. And the second step will only involve parties at the level of the compensatory calculation for overall proportional restoration. Now, there are some technical refinements.
Mr. Mamabolo?
Yes,
sir. CEO, thanks. Perhaps before you move on with regard to the formula, I just wanted to see if members have any questions for clarity based on I think the slide that's reflecting now, we probably understand this, but on the previous slide with regard to the formula that has been used. Our members, do you have any questions or issues for clarity that you think you would want to raise, or you're clear on the formula? But I must also indicate, CEO, that the presentation that you're giving us now, we did receive a presentation. It doesn't necessarily include all the slides that you are presenting. So I'm sure members are probably also getting up to speed with the formula. But perhaps if we could go to the previous slide, the one of formulas. The step two. because I think understanding the formula is simple in the step one. But with these steps, when you're using, when you're doing the division of the total valid votes, which is the TR, you're dividing it by the total seats plus one, which is the normal formula we do understand. And I think many members come from various parties have an idea of this. But we also subtract that of independence, and perhaps you could just clarify that a bit before you move. CEO, are you still with me?
Yes, Chair. No, thank you very much. You were breaking a bit, but if I got the gist of the question, the independents are in a sense only participating in the regional election. However, when you restore overall proportionality, or you attempt to restore overall proportionality, you factor votes cast on the compensatory ballot as well as votes cast on the regional elections. So you take the total valid votes, both nationally and provincially, put them together and divide that by total seats and add one minus seats already won by independents. And this is important because they are not participating in the compensatory element. they're not participating in the compensatory element, which is why you have to subtract the seats that they have already won. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
Yes, I just wanted that to be clear as well. Thank you.
Am
I audible? Can you hear me?
Yes, you are.
Okay, thank you. And my concern with the seat calculation is that the system where independents stand in each province separately almost guarantees recalculation in every province. So every time there's a recalculation, then the largest party will be most likely to benefit from that. And the smaller numbers used for the example, for this example, don't they hide this tendency? I just want to ask that for clarity.
Okay, I'm not sure, CEO, if you want to take that now or when you're done with your presentation. But perhaps maybe take us through the presentation. Let's hang on to that question as well. And then we can deal with that. At the moment, I just thought we could get an understanding of the actual calculations that have been used here. I think we will take this conversation further after your presentation. Honorable Sessit, you bear with me on this one. Please continue.
Sure. Honorable
Sessit? Sorry, then. I don't know what's going on with the network today.
Yes, we'll withstand with that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Sessit. CEO?
CEO, you're on mute. We can't hear you. excuse me, chairperson of the committee. I am trying to get the CEO to. CEO, you are on mute.
Okay, sorry, we're having some issues here. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Yes, thank you. There are two broad technical refinements that we wish to propose on the existing draft. The first relates to the forfeiture recalculations during the results determination process at election time. And that pertains to item 7 and 12 and contextually with changes to item 23 and 24. And we will illustrate this with an example shortly. On a high level, independent candidates were excluded to prevent a second seat to be allocated, which would cause another recalculation. In other words, a never-ending calculation scenario. However, this also inadvertently protects an independent who gains a seat on a remainder where other contestants will not receive the same treatment. So we think that this has to be corrected so that all contestants are again treated on the basis of parity. So that's the first technical correction that we want to deal with. Then there's also an issue in item 21 when an independent candidate wins a regional as well as a provincial seat, because an independent can decide to contest in a region as well as in a provincial election. And it's possible that they may win on both ends. And if that materializes, then they must exercise an election within 2 days after the results have been announced. In the current draft, we treated that as a forfeiture calculation, but in fact, it ought to be a vacancy recalculation. So it's that technical cleanup that we also propose. Now, getting into the scenarios to illustrate this refinement that we propose. The scenarios are based on the actual results from the 2019 election. We have relabeled party names projected them as independent candidates. And for ease of illustration, we've removed parties with less than 10,000 votes just for clarity, although they form part of the overall calculation. Now, this scenario deals with a regional seat calculation with an independent gaining more than one seat and thus triggering a forfeiture recalculation. You'll see that in this scenario, there were 4.5 million valid votes in this region. And there are 48 seats available in that region. And when you take the total valid votes and you divide that by 48 seats plus one, the result plus one, your quota is 92,601, meaning in this region of Gauteng, this is the Gauteng result in 2019, meaning in this region in Gauteng, in order to get a single seat into the National Assembly, you needed, regional seat. You needed 92,601 votes that will get you one seat. Now, when you are doing your allocating, you take the total valid vote for each party and you divide that by the quota, you get zero for the party one, 26 for party seven, and then they have a remainder of 6,353. Party one, they get the first allocation of zero, therefore their total valid votes remain as the remainder. And so it goes, but here's the point. Look at the red one, independent number five. They have 175,152 valid votes. And you divide that by the quota, it gives them one seat on the first allocation with a remainder of 82,551. But in the first allocation, you are only able to allocate 45 seats instead of the 48. Then you must, the remainders must compete, the highest remainders must compete for the excess seats. There are three excess seats here. And the biggest remainder goes to that independent at 82,000. And the second biggest remainder is 58,098 by party 26. And the third biggest remainder is independent 7 as 45,840. So you then rank them accordingly. The result, though, is that independent 5 now gets 2 seats. But this is an independent, it's a single person. You need, therefore, to have a four-page calculation. While they retain their seat, the other seat must go back into the pot for a recalculation. And the next slide shows the current drafting scenario. In terms of the current drafting scenario, in doing the forfeiture recalculation, it excludes independent 7. So we think that and protect that seat that they've won. We think that that ought not to be the case. The only exclusion ought to be that of independent number 5 and protecting the seat that they have already gained and allow the rest of the contestants to compete accordingly. In the event, the independent number 7 still gets the seat if on the proposal that we wish to make. They still get that seat. But you'll see that they get the seat on the remainder of 45,000 votes against the quota of 89,926. So that's the first technical refinement that we wish the committee to look at. But there's a general principle that we want to demonstrate, and that is the more you reduce the quota, it results in a higher remainder for contestants in relation to the seats that they've won in the first round. So, and that is it's a consequence of the electoral outcome, that the more votes you gain, when the quota is reduced for whatever reason, the remainder for electoral contestants increases. So in this scenario, we've artificially reduced the quota by 1,000. And as the quota reduces, the remainder for parties or even independents increase in relation to the number of seats gained. So it's an inherent principle, as it were, in how the formula operates. Now, the second scenario relates to the vacancies. Now, the vacancies only obtain midterm, where an independent, for instance, perhaps dies or resigns, or they are no longer qualified in terms of the constitution to hold office. Then you have to do a vacancy calculation. Now the principle works the same, that you take the total valid votes, and you indicate there on the slide that independent five marked in red causes the vacancy. And in the next slide, you have to do a recalculation, a vacancy recalculation, and remove the votes of that independent from the calculation. And when you do that, it reduces the total valid votes on the one, it reduces your quota, it reduces your quota as well, and naturally it increases the remainder for contestants because of the principle that I indicated earlier. So in this case, the Schedule 23 protects the seats already held. In other words, when we apply this calculation, a vacancy calculation, where a party has 20 seats, we're protecting those 20 seats. And where an independent has a seat, that is protected, so that you don't have a situation where you had a seat and then because of a vacancy recalculation, you no longer have a seat. In this calculation, party five gains that extra seat that was vacated by the independent. It could be any party. It depends on the strength of their remainders. You could see that Party 5 there has the second biggest remainder at 23,000 after Party 17. So again here in item 23 and item 24, we would like technical adjustments to be made to give effect to this proposition. Before I sit down, Chairperson, I just want to check with my colleagues if there's something of import that I left out. Yeah, just to indicate in conclusion that the technical refinements in schedules in item 23 and 24 are contextually necessary because of the technical refinements made in 7 and 12. And that concludes the presentation on the seat calculation. Thanks, Chairperson of the Commission and Chair of the Committee.
Chairperson of the session, we're in your hands, Chairperson of the committee. Thank you very much indeed.
No, it's fine. I was actually speaking to myself. But thank you very much. I forgot to unmute. Thank you very much for the presentation. I think we must also appreciate and welcome all the commissioners from the IEC that are present with us today as well. And I can't agree more with you, Chairperson of the Commission, that there has been a lot of public interest in this bill, and there have been various perceptions of on the bill, and some of it have also been incorrect. And I think in our meeting with the Department of Home Affairs last week, we tried to address some of these. But I think I guess we take comfort in the fact that the method being used, the DRUP method, is a method that has been used as a country since 1994. And I see that you're also proposing amendments firstly to deal with the fairness between political parties and independent candidates with reference to the signature requirements, etc. But also you're looking at other two technical type amendments that you would want to propose to deal with other aspects of the formula, and I would imagine to also make it more free. Our members, I'm going to I don't know if the Deputy Minister is present, and if he wants to say something, I'm not seeing him on the platform, but anyway, be that as it may. Our members, let me then hand over to yourself. I'm going to start with maybe let me get a speak. Honourable Fisher, can I see Honourable Dengue, your hand is up. And Honourable Fisher, maybe just you could just repeat or reiterate your question that you raised, and then I'll take Honourable Dengue next. And as honourable members raise hands, we'll take their hands as well. Honourable Fisher.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I will just repeat it that my concern is with the seat calculation is that this system where independents stand in each province separately almost guarantees a recalculation in every province. And every time there is a recalculation, then would the largest party not be most likely to benefit from that in respect of the smaller numbers or the smaller parties? Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Honourable Fisher. I hope you got that question, Commissioners and or CEO. I can't miss the word, but anyway, let me take you, Honourable Daniel.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. Chairperson, the Electoral Amendment Bill has obviously generated the necessary interest from the public, civil society and analysts. There has been a call for the overhaul of the electoral system in its entirety. This call obviously goes beyond what the Constitutional Court ordered Parliament to do. What is the view of the IEC on the calls for the constituency-based electoral system, firstly informed by the Constitutional Court judgment, secondly, the practicality of introducing a constituency-based electoral system, and thirdly, whether it is feasible to introduce a constituency-based system? Chairperson, we cannot only reduce this particular matter to a technicality. We have to look at the philosophy. We have to look at the narratives as to what informed, in the first place, prior to 1994, the electoral system of proportionality, and the reasons there too, in that it had to be inclusive and bring everybody on board, but also that didn't have to promote the question of race, tribe, and any other exclusive entity. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Banga. Honorable Bartlett?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning to all the members. Honorable Chair, good morning to Mr. Honorable Chair. I just want to know, what is the view of the ISC on the provision in the bill that an independent candidate can contest in more than one region, but the seat will be located to the region where the independent candidate has been from. So, Chair, I'm not sure if where the independent candidate has more votes. I'm not sure. Was it clear, Chairperson?
I think you are clear. Let me take Honorable Nongeni.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. Good morning, everybody. My question, Chair, is about the bill provide the filling of vacancies in the event of independent candidate is no longer available to occupy a seat for a variety of the reasons. What is the view of the IEC on the process of on the process or formula to be used to fill vacancies for independent candidates? How has the filling of vacancies been done since 1994? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ndungeni. Honorable Maleka.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to members and the CEO and the Chairperson from the IEC. Chairperson, the other concern from civil society in relation to what is called the discarding of votes, can the IEC elaborate the circumstances under which votes are discarded and whether this has been a practice in our electoral system and what are the global practices on this matter? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Maleka. Honorable Tepa.
Are you saying Tepa, Chair?
And
oh, thank you, Chair. Chair, good morning. Yeah, I do hear you, Chair. Am I also audible? I hear you, Chair. Can I continue?
Yes, you are. Yes, please continue.
I'm saying, Chair, the bill provides for requirement for registration of independent candidates. This is understood to mean that new political parties are also required to submit signature for their registration as outlined in the current Act. How does the IEC propose on the matter of equalizing the requirement for signature for registration of both political parties and the independent candidate? And also, what I want to attach there, how are they going to ensure, Chair, that the issue of fraudulent signature can be picked up? Because people can shop this signature and then 13,000 is nothing. I've seen the minimum was 13,000. 13,000, you can sit down in a room and put up all the signature and submit. How are these things going to be also be verified to ensure that these are authentically signatures? I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mketwa. Honorable Seleku.
Good morning, Chair. And good morning to the representatives of the IEC and all members of Parliament.
Good morning.
Can you hear me, Chair? Am I audible, Chair?
Yes, you are.
Yes, yes.
Oh,
yes, you are, Honorable
Seleku. The attack on the yes is very intimidating, Chair. Thank you very much. Mine, Chair, it's one or two. Firstly, I would like to ask the members of the Electoral Commission, what is their view in terms of the time allocated to us as members of Parliament to actually deal with this particular bill, as they have also said and shared with us that this is a very technical bill and that there has been a lot of cry or comments in this particular bill. In their view, do they think if the National Assembly started earlier, maybe it would have allowed us to look at all the loopholes in making sure that this particular bill is not challenged by civil society members at a constitutional court based on issues of misunderstanding, of issues of unclearness in this particular bill? That would be my first question. And Chair, then we go to the issue of the signatures. And I just want to get some, just maybe a repeat or just a clarity. So is the proposed percentage of 20% also going to be applicable to political parties that will be contesting for the first time? And also latching to that one, is the ones that have already contested previously, is it not applicable to them, the issue of the 20% of signatures? And also, Chair, let us deal with the issue of vacancies and also the issue of the remainder. Chair, this is mathematics is not for everyone. And I think that's why you'll find less questions based on the formula. But one, how does one guarantee that a seat that has been won by an independent does not go to a political party? How does one guarantee? Because you know what is so nice about this presentation, that the CEO will say an independent is an individual, independent is one person. So automatically you just get one seat, but you'll find that some independents will even garner more support than even political parties. We know political parties that even struggle to get 500 votes in local government elections. So we might be faced with a similar scenario in this instance. How are we going to guarantee that a seat won by independent and due to the remainder of the next independent being lower than the party? You know, or let me rephrase. For instance, Chair, an example that an independent gets two seats, and the next person to, in terms of the formula, who's got the highest remainder will be a political party. So automatically that seat will go to a political party. So one will look at the one would have liked to see that if an independent loses a seat, that that particular seat should actually benefit the next independent. But it will only won't be guaranteed if the next independent, in terms of the quota, is actually less. So one would want to know, how does one actually guarantee that? And also, let me deal also with the issue of vacancies. Let's say I'm an independent, I'm Isaac Sileku. Due to matters beyond my control, I decide that I want to leave and I forfeit my seat as an independent. So what are they saying in terms of the calculation? Where would that seat go? Would that seat be allocated to a party with the highest remainder, or would that seat be allocated to an independent with the highest remainder? Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Sileku. Honorable Mikulati?
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, everyone. Chairperson, I just have two questions. The first one is, currently, if a member of parliament give up, or a member of the National Assembly gives up their seat, it goes to the political party of which that MP was a member. So regardless of how many people come and go, the proportionality of the National Assembly remains more or less the same as it was after the elections, in other words, what the people voted for. What we will on this model sit with eventually is that depending on how many independents get in, and I've seen, if I understood it correctly, quite a few of them got in on fractions. But depending on how many independents come in, how many of them leave within the 5 years, that you might end up with the National Assembly that proportionally does not represent what the election results represented at the beginning of the term. And I think that is where the moral problem comes in with, is the possibility that you might sit with a National Assembly that completely looks or even slightly looks different from what the election outcome was. That's my first question. I just want the IEC's opinion on and whether they acknowledge that that this creates a bit of a problem with the electorate. It sits uneasy with many of us, and I would like to know whether they are comfortable with this. The other question I have is, the beginning of the slides were opened with references to proportionality and also specific references to jurisdictions or countries or parliaments that have a threshold for political parties. I would like to ask what the IEC's position of independence gaining a seat in the National Assembly, but it will also create quite a bit of stability in coalition forming going forward. So I would just like to know what the IEC's position is on the proposal of such a threshold.
Sorry, Chairperson, through you, the Honourable Member was really inaudible in relation to the second question. May we ask that we get that second question again, please?
Chair, would you like me to repeat it, or should I put it in the chat room?
It would be kind to repeat it so that we can respond to it.
Okay. My question was that you started your presentation referring to certain jurisdictions having a threshold, certain parliaments having a threshold. My question is, obviously, such a threshold is going to have a impact on the number of independents that can be elected to parliament on the one side. On the other side, such a threshold might bring more stability to future coalitions. I simply want to know, what is the IEC's position at this stage on the introduction of such a threshold? Thank you very much.
Chairperson, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Honorable Dudu.
Okay,
are you next in line, Honorable Dudu?
Is it me?
Please continue, Honorable Dudu.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. In the first instance, let me welcome the presentation. I think it was a very good educative presentation, but very technical, I must confess. But I'm happy that the IEC has tried its level best to simplify it and to make us understand how to calculate the seats, both in the National Assembly and the provincial legislatures. Chair, I would imagine when it is so technical and difficult to ask, what about an ordinary member, an ordinary citizen, an ordinary voter? I wish that once this process is concluded, IEC must embark on a very, very rigorous campaign to educate ordinary South Africans how this particular process works. I think it will be to the benefit of our people as well, especially in the wake of the fact that this bill has attracted a lot of interest. But in the same vein, Honorable Chair, I really wish to thank the IEC and everybody involved. Remember, Honorable Chair, we were only given 2 years to rectify the defects in the legislation which was declared unconstitutional. Now, given the nature and the complexity of this legislation, 2 years is little. I know of many, many other laws which have been there for many years, 5 years, 6 years, and they are not as complex as this particular legislation. And I really want to thank all those who are involved in this process to simplify it, to work very hard to ensure that we are constitutionally compliant in that respect. If you allow me, Honorable Second, I switch off my video. I'll struggle as I go on. And my gadget doesn't favor me and the load sharing. Having said that, Honorable Chair, I have some few questions that I want to ask the IEC. Firstly, the question that I want to ask pertains to the number of party agents. There's been a lot of talk about the number of party agents who must be there representing both political parties and independents. Then my question would be, does the IEC think that it is appropriate that there must be a specific provision, as many people request, a specific provision in the bill that addresses the issue of party agents per voting station? That's the first question, Honorable Chair. The second question pertains to the fee that must be paid by independent and political parties. There's been an outcry that political parties are paying, I expect them to pay less, or those who are already registered have paid less, and the independents are paying more. Will the IEC look at this and find a way of addressing it to ensure parity? That is my next question, Honorable Chair. I've got other questions that I want to also pose. I do understand personally the forfeiture calculation and the reallocation of seats after that. But is that my understanding correct? That therefore, based on what has been presented to us this morning, does it suggest that in South Africa going forward, we are not going to use that system that is used elsewhere, the electoral threshold, which require that each party or each candidate must receive a minimum share of votes. Is this by implication what it means? The last one, Honorable Chair, there is a problem in relation to the formula itself. And my question is that because, as I understand the presentation, the independents will only participate for regional seats and not for PR complementary seats. Will this not create a problem? Will people not say, you are excluding us from the complementary seat participation in that sense, or what? For now, Chair, I'll pause there and ask those questions, and maybe I can come up to make some follow-ups. Thank you very much.
And thank you very much, Honorable Dodogo. And I'm not going to put on my camera, and my apologies for that. I've already been thrown off the platform once. I'll just keep the camera off for now, so my signal strength increases. I think that's just from, let me think on all honorable members for their inputs and for their questions. I just have one additional question to add. I think it's with regard to what transpired out of the process from the National Assembly Portfolio Committee of Home Affairs. That is around the regulations, the Electoral Commission regulations with regard to signatures for political parties. What is being presented to us today, I think, is also a recommendation by the Electoral Commission that you're proposing an amendment. But perhaps if you can maybe clarify the two, because I understand the issue of amending the regulations to address the issue of signatures as opposed to making this proposed amendment. If you can just get some kind of clarity on that. Thank you very much. Let me then hand over to yourself, Commissioner. To take us through the responses.
Thank you so much, Chairperson of the session. And I want to thank you and your members. I'm going to ask the CEO and his team to deal with the questions that are here. And if there's anything that is left, members of the commission that are online and myself will deal with this. But there are three comments I wish to make up front. When we started, I indicated that there has been a significant amount of interest in this bill. But it hasn't been so much the simple writing of the law. It has been the technical part of how seats are allocated. This is unprecedented. We've never had that situation, but we understand. And that's why today it's as if we are attending a lecture in some mathematics or statistics or something like that. It's unfortunately what it is and what we have to deal with. And in that process, members have indicated, I noted three comments from members, comments from three different members saying, not everyone is mathematically inclined. And that makes it difficult. That is the thing that makes this bill, when people ask about how these are allocated and they disagree and you explain and you lose them, they simply say, you're going to take votes from independents and give them to parties. I guess when we explain and through the formula, you will realize that is the myth. There is no vote that is intended for one that will be gained by the other. And this is a myth that is unfortunately so widespread. And the mathematics, the law doesn't say so in terms of this bill. The last thing that I wanted to indicate is that, you know, the CEO has indicated, and the questions have come even after he has indicated, that when we were dealing with political parties, there was general proportion almost cleaner than we will have now. The mere fact that you introduce independence creates or introduces disproportionality, but we still need to restore it right at the end. And that is a thing that we as a nation, not just the Electoral Commission, not just yourselves, in the Select Committee have to just accommodate that, all of us. And in so doing, there are certain things we're going to gain and others that we're going to lose. The last thing I wanted to just point out is the issue of votes being discarded and the myth that independence, for independence, they really bleed the discarding of votes. Parties do the same. If a party gets 70,000 votes, but to get a seat, they'll need 60,000. They're going to get only one seat. The 10,000 they're going to discard because the 10,000 does not get them another seat. Independents are the same. They need a certain amount of votes to get a seat. And because they're independent, if they attain more than they need, that is discarded. So there is no disparity in dealing with the one as opposed to the other. But having said so, these are matters that are out in the public for debate, and we trust that in the process that the Select Committee will be taking, that the public truly gets to see the difficulties that we are presented with, all of us, not just the Commission, not just yourselves, not that just the citizens, all of us, in dealing with this matter, and a matter that we importantly have to deal with. Having said so, I'd like to ask the CEO and his team and my colleagues, we have noted the questions, and as we respond to them, if there's any remainder or question that has not been answered, members of the Commission will deal with, and we will see how best we close. But CEO, will you kick us off with your team on the responses? Thank you.
CEO.
Thank you very much. I'm joined in here by Mr. Shibori and Mr. Plessy, my colleagues who will help me navigate some of the questions, and they'll deal with others. The fact that the independents are allowed to contest multiple regions, does it not mean by design you're going to have a recalculation? Is there no guaranteed recalculation? The answer to that question is it depends on whether an independent wins multiple seats. In any case where there's been multiple seats won, a recalculation, a forfeiture calculation is mandated. Now, I don't know what the incidence of that is going to be. We can only deal with that post-election when we know how many independents have won multiple seats. But now, on the questions of the desirability, practicality, and feasibility of a constituency-based system, the Commission's view has been that it is not its station to determine for the country the type of electoral system that must be employed. The Constitution reserves that role to Parliament. The Commission has offered itself to technically advise on the practicality of whichever option Parliament wishes to implement. That said, at the very beginning, when the Concord issued its judgment in 2020, the Commission presented Parliament with timelines and said, if Parliament is inclined to implement a constituency-based system, this will be the timeline. And if Parliament is inclined on a system that does not include constituencies, this is the timeline. Where we are at the moment, ahead of 2024, the horse, in our view, has bolted in relation to those timelines that we had presented to Parliament in 2020. Now, and we really want this to be understood well. We're not making a practical choice about the systems. We're merely saying, given the timelines that we have served in Parliament, drawing up the boundaries now, setting up a law to facilitate that delimitation, setting up an institution to do that delimitation and so on, would not afford us enough opportunity ahead of 2024 to do those all that is necessary. Now, in terms of the why the possibility, the legal possibility for an independent to contest several regions. It's because although they're contesting the region, they are contesting a national parliament, which is a constituency in a sense. So it should be possible to do so from any point in the country, even for independents. But as indicated, it's not a legally mandatory position. An independent candidate must exercise an election and say, do I want to contest multiple regions or I don't? What is the benefit of doing so? And so those are the decisions that an independent will have to make for themselves and decide accordingly. Now, the filling of a vacancy, a by-election as a methodology to fill a vacancy is impractical, because it means you would have province-wide by-elections involving significant campaign costs for parties and independents, as well as significant outlay of resources on by the Commission. And if the local government by-election regularity is anything to go by, it may mean every quarter in some provinces there's province-wide. So that as a mechanism of filling vacancies, we believe to be impractical. Insofar as political parties are concerned, the reserve list that they have as managed by the Secretary of the Legislature will continue. Nothing changes in respect of that. Insofar as independence go, a recalculation excluding the votes of that independent who causes the vacancy will be done. And based on the outcome of that calculation, either a party or another independent may get a seat, depending on the numerical number of votes they receive at election time. So you're not introducing anything, or you're not basing your calculations on anything other than the numerical votes received at the time of elections. Put differently, you are giving effect to the will of the voter in that region still. Now, of course, it is correct that as the vacancies occur and recalculations done, it is possible that you are moving away from proportionality. It's an inevitable consequence of having independence as part of your framework. Remember, we said at the very beginning that introducing independence is having a disproportionate effect. And this is one manifestation of that disproportionate effect. The most important thing, though, is that all contestants are treated fairly and with a measure of parity in the calculations. So we base therefore that calculation on the valid votes that each party got at election times. Now, the issue that the chairperson of the commission dealt with is correct, and here's the truth. There is no electoral system that does not result in the wastage of votes, because not every vote leads to representation. And once you accept this, it means then that all electoral systems have a degree of wastage. And different families of systems have high or low propensities for wastage. They are not the same. The proportional representation system that is proposed in Schedule 1A is among the system with the least wastage. It does not completely remove it, but it's one of the systems in the world with the least level of wastage. Now, let's just take this as an example. If in a region, in region A, the quota of votes per seat is 50,000, and a party or an independent candidate gets 35,000 votes, it means that 35,000 is not enough to give that contestant a seat, be they an independent or a party. But 35,000 is not enough to get them a seat. And because those votes, the 35,000 votes, are not resulting in an allocation of the seats, it's a wastage. Similar, if a party, if the quota remains 50,000 and a party or an independent gets 55,000 votes, it means they'll hit the 50, get one seat, and they'll have a residual of 5,000, but that residual of 5,000 does not lead into another seat. Again, there's a wastage of votes. So even in a PR, despite the fact that it exhibits the less propensity for less wastage of votes, there is the type of wastage. Now, in a constituency-based system, as an example, if we have a simple first past the post constituency-based election, and assuming that there are four or five, let's say five candidates contesting in a geographic constituency, if candidate A gets 50,000, candidate B gets 40,000, candidate C gets 30,000, and the last one 20,000. It means candidate A with 50,000 has won the constituency, and all these other votes, the 90,000 votes for candidate B, C, and D, and E, it's a waste. Because you take the candidates with the highest number of votes in the first past the post system. So there is not a system, as I say, in my humble view, that has no wastage. The issue is, what is the degree of wastage? On the issue of signatures, the bill as it stands says the requirement for signatures is applicable to independent candidates. The commission says the reach of that provision must apply in the same way to political parties who currently don't have representation in a legislative post. By so doing, you bring parity of treatment to political parties that don't have representation, as well as independents who don't have representation. Now, initially, the commission was of the view that you could bring that parity of treatment through the regulations. But on reflection, you want to have the equality of the weight of the statutory instrument. Because you can't in the one case use a higher strength statutory instrument, which is an act of parliament, and in the other case use regulation, which doesn't have the same weight as an act of parliament. Just that situation is an unequal treatment in and of itself. So you want to attain parity of treatment and the weight of the statutory instrument used to realize that parity. That's really what the commission is dealing with. Now, the time that is allocated to the committee, it's really a matter outside of the purview really of the commission. The interest of the commission in the matter is that we need a central electoral system for us to be able to organize the orderly conduct of the 2024 election. That's our interest. That we need a settled electoral system to be able to prepare for a well-organized election. The longer it takes the country to determine and finalize an electoral system, the less time is available to prepare for an election. And we can't guarantee the quality of an election. We need, based on whatever is finalized by Parliament, we need to rewrite our business applications to accord with the new scenario. We need to rewrite our candidate nomination system. We need to rewrite the results system. We need to write other ancillary systems, our training systems, our logistics systems, to accord with the new electoral system. Now, other vacancies, the remainder, look, in order to get to a perfect proportionality, you need to allocate all the seats in the first allocation. That gives you a better chance to reach perfect proportionality. But as soon as you move away from the first allocation to the second allocation, where you consider remainders, it means those contestants are beginning to buy a seat at less than the quota of votes, and therefore inducing disproportions. But that is a consequence of the electoral outcomes. It is not a design to impair the interests of any contestant. It's just a logical consequence of the outcomes of an election. Now, the issue, the last thing I'll deal with before I hand over to Dr. Shimuru, is the issue of the electoral threshold. The bill as it stands does not propose the introduction of an electoral threshold. There's no formal, perhaps we should say, there is no formal electoral threshold proposed. All you need to do is to achieve a quota of votes per seat that is applicable, and that gives you a seat. But there's no formal threshold that says the first condition is that you must reach 5% of the vote before you are you qualify for consideration. There is no such a proposition going forward. Okay. The issue of party agents is that it is part of our electoral architecture to have party agents observe all electoral processes. The Electoral Commission remains committed to that level of transparency. It has served the country well, and it's not something that the country can jettison at this point. So that's the principle that is inherent in the proposition. However, defining the numbers in the act can result, can have unintended consequences. For instance, to say two per party or whatever number is agreed upon. Arrangements will be made in terms of the arrangements will be made in terms of the regulations to work out a system of giving every electoral contestant an opportunity to observe elections given the limitations of space that there may be, given the limitations induced by the number of contestants. We don't know how many people are going to be contested. For instance, in Gauteng in 2019 for the provincial legislature, there were 48 parties. And if you say that multiplied by two takes you to almost over 100 party agents. Now, there are facilities that can accommodate it, but there are facilities that may not accommodate it. So you've got to work out a system together with the National Party Liaison Committee of giving everybody a fair opportunity to observe within the principle of total transparency of the process. So there is no intention that says parties and independent candidates are not going to observe election. That is an antithesis of our history of elections in the country, and it's not something intended to be jettisoned anytime soon. The deposits, they are not determined in the Act. The Commission will have to, by way of regulation, set those deposits. Of course, the Commission will have a public process to ensure that there is broad consultation with all electoral stakeholders, political parties, independents, and other bodies in society who may wish to bring their views to bear on the ultimate determination of the Commission. So there are no deposits set yet. That is left to the Commission to determine at a later point. There is no doubt that more than at any point in our political history is a massive public education on the electoral system required. Clearly, it's a very complex system that has to be simplified for the population, and it is going to be incumbent upon the Commission, political parties, the whole of the state machinery, as it were, to mount a huge public education campaign on the new, on the revised electoral system. I think, Chairperson, I've dealt with the questions, and I hand back to you, Dr. Mwesh.
Chair of the committee, let me just round up and see if there's anything that we have missed that my colleagues want to speak about. I think the CEO has indeed dealt with the questions. There's one specific thing I thought I should ask Commissioner Love to just deal with it. The issue I think it's Honorable Michalakis raised in relation to the moral problem that we might sit with, at the end of the term as opposed to the beginning of the term. I know the CEO has dealt with this in part, And I know it's easier said than done to say that one of the major challenges you have, and we have never had to deal with in this instance, is the fact that to fill vacancies, and vacancies do arise. 5 years is a long period. Vacancies will arise unless we have a nationwide by-election, and we may have lots if we do. We will have to improvise a system, and the view that was placed in this bill was to say the will of the people for that period must be adhered to as far as is possible. The fact that an individual that they had voted for with his or her set of campaign policies has no longer or is no longer available, it means that the next best person still represents the will of the people. But I know Commissioner Love has a way of saying it much better than I do, and I'd like to get her to raise that. And raise any other issues, Commissioner Love, Commissioner Mashinini, if you're there, and there's something we miss, Commissioner Masuku, let's deal with it. And I know my colleagues have indicated to me that we have dealt with most of those issues they don't have. But in the event that something comes to their mind, let's round up quickly and then hand back to the chairperson of the session. Commissioner Love, I'm with you now.
Thank you very much, chairperson, and greetings to all the honourable members. I really don't know that I can, in focusing on the issue of the effect that the replacement of independent candidates and the number of independent candidates will have on proportionality, I don't know that I can deal with that more effectively than you have now, or certainly than the CEO has. So, but I do want to say that we're clear that the introduction of independent candidates into the national and provincial electoral space is new. And so as we have done, going back as far as 1994, but certainly since the current electoral legislation, we've reviewed, and we will expect without a question for there to be a review to make sure that we limit any undermining or any weakening, let me not even call it undermining, of proportionality to the extent possible. But again, I think as the CEO has said, we cannot expect to have perfect proportionality at any point. And so I just wanted to relate this to the question that was asked earlier on, I think it was by the Honourable Member Dangle, about the extent to which, we've looked at the electoral system, not just from the point of technicalities. Well, the Electoral Commission, and I'm sure many members of Parliament, look at the electoral system continuously. And obviously there's a very big discussion to be had at a national level all the time about how the system can be strengthened, how accountability can be dealt with, and so on. Ours is really just to say that is not in our domain. That is in the domain of political leadership, both in Parliament and out of Parliament. And we will respect those conversations and do everything we can to make what is decided on as realistic and implementable as possible. And so lastly, I just wanted to say, Chairperson of the Commission and to the Honourable Members, the issue of public education is definitely something that we are very, very mindful of. And this is not just education in relation to democracy, but particularly in terms of this, in terms of voter education. The difficulty I think that we are going to possibly face is that in the heated moments of debate around this legislation, there are things that have been said that give the impression that some of the maths, there was an honourable member who commented on the maths or the arithmetic, that this is just a new thing. It's a new phenomenon. It's not new. We've been dealing with the maths and the arithmetic and the proportions and the statistics right from the outset. And we've dealt with it, in fact, even last year in 2021 when we dealt with local government elections. And it's true that it might be that a teacher who's teaching English and who wants to go and vote might not understand about the droop calculation or exactly how the different quotas are reached. But I don't think if that same teacher doesn't understand this bill, I don't think that teacher would have understood necessarily the issues around the local government processes. And so I think it's important to get across to people that we, sure, you've heard our CEO who's now also becoming a professor of maths and statistics. You've heard him, and I'm sure he would be very willing to engage with many people. But I think that the important thing is that to make sure that we get it as best as we can in terms of ensuring equitable treatment and ensuring that we deal with proportionality. And I think that that's really what underpins all the advice of the Commission up until now. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Commissioner Love. I got an indication from Commissioners Masuku and Mashinini that they are covered. We're still good? Is that still the case?
Yes, it is, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Commissioner Mashinini, you're good?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I am covered.
Okay. Chairperson of the committee, I want to hand back to you with only two comments, really. One is that this is a matter that we hear about and people talk about in a very difficult way. And they say things that we know when we present this to you, they are not supported. We are constrained to deal with them from where we sometimes sit. But we do think that a platform such as this will help educate people. Some of the things we have heard, of course, are concerns. The refinements we have suggested come from the comments and constructive criticism that has been gained from the public amongst others and submissions that are made. And that we commit we will always do. But there are many, many allegations being made, unfortunately, that are not supported by what we have presented before you. And I think this committee and ourselves, all of us, will have to engage with this matters in the best way possible. This was our presentation today, Chairperson. We commit to remain available to you and to explain anything that is technically important for us to explain. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of the Commission and all our commissioners, as well as the CEO and relevant staff within the Commission. For this informative presentation, as well as the engagement with honourable members in terms of the questions that they asked with clarity on the work that the IEC does and also on the bill itself. I think in terms of the proposed amendments, we will obviously bear this in mind as we engage further on public comments that we receive on this bill. The closing date of which is actually today. I just remind honourable members that this is not the end of our engagement with the IEC on these matters. We will continue with this engagement, and I think as public comments come out with regard to issues that relate to the IEC, we will obviously engage a lot more with yourself, Commissioner. And the institution, the IEC is an institution. So let me, with those words, also thank you once again, and also perhaps release you as the IEC from this meeting. We have one additional agenda item which we would want to continue with as a committee. I'll get that invitation as well from honourable members. Thank you very much, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Members, we'll then move on to the next agenda item with regard to the drug and the drug trafficking amendment bill. We as a committee received a briefing on this bill on the 12th of October 2022. The bill was advertised for public comment. Please mute your mic.
Oh, thank you. Sorry.
Prima.
Well,
as I was saying, members, yes, the bill was advertised and the closing date for comments was the 4th of November 2022. The committee, we only received one submission on the bill, and I think the department is present on the platform. Gershon, please confirm for me if they are present on the platform to take us through. The comments on the bill that we received were very generic. But perhaps let me give the opportunity to, if it's thorough on the platform, I'm not sure, to take us through. I see Ms. Pillay. Okay, let me hand over to the department.
Thank you, Ms. Chairperson. Saul Roberts from the Department of Justice. There was one comment that was received. Thank you. And comments, or rather submissions that we made in the comment, mainly relates, amongst others, to proposals relating to matters that is not covered by the bill as such, but it deals with the enforcement of the Drug and Drug Trafficking Act in general. Amongst others, there is suggestions or remarks to the effect that the members of the public to get rewards if they support dealers in drugs. And there's also remarks regarding increased sentences for government officials involved in drug trafficking, and also how you deal with people serving a sentence who is not a South African citizen. And there's also a remark regarding some innovation to deal or detect drugs. So that is basically the comment. I think we did provide a response there too. Since it's not directly relevant to the bill, I'm not going to explain it in detail. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Robertson, for that presentation. Members, as I indicated that, the comment was quite general and it didn't necessarily specify any proposed amendment to the bill. But I should also remind members that we did meet, let me just see if honorable members have any comments that they'd like to make with regard to this. Presentation. Okay, I don't see any hands, but just to remind our members that in the meeting of the 12th of October, we did seek clarity on the delays in introducing the bill to Parliament, given that the Concord deadline of the 17th of December, as well as the level of consultation that was undertaken in relation to the bill. The department did respond to us at that point that the process to introduce the bill started in April 2022, that the socioeconomic impact assessment procedure had to be followed, which had to be approved by the JCPS structure, that the department obtained cabinet approval and then introduced the bill. Further, that SAPS and two experts were consulted on the bill, and the department also advised that is only addressing the Constitutional Court order in the current bill and will address all other matters at a later stage. I think that being said, honourable members, and I think also the time that I think we have between now and our plenary at 2, perhaps if there's no additional comment from members, let me then bring this meeting to an end or conclude this meeting. Let me thank you very much, all members, for your attendance and your participation in this on this platform. And let me declare the meeting closed. Thank you very much, all members.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Ken.